Blog Talk Radio.
Joanne Barton, and you are listening to Applause Radio Show, and my co-host, Mr.
Hey, I'm John Arricchio. How you doing, guys?
Hey, and John Arricchio, coming to you guys. Tonight we have a kick-ass show. Oh, my God, I'm so excited. We've got Greg Kinn and Joe Alves. Everybody knows Greg Kinn. My God, I don't have to say anything. It's just like, if you don't know, we're going to school you and make you just say, do you know him now? And you're going to say, And then we have production designer Joe Alves. He's joining us around 7:30. He designed the shark on Jaws, and he's every other movie that had special effects during the time with Spielberg. And so anyway, real quick, before we start, thank you to our sponsors, the High Barn Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kintnersville, Pennsylvania, KWB Wines in South Africa, and Cheese for the Times in Clifton, New Jersey. On the phone is Mr. Greg Kinn. Greg, how are you? Thank you for joining us.
Hey, I'm great, and it's great to be on the show. Thanks for having me. Oh, these are weird times, man. You know, I've basically been in the house.
I know. And you know what? I finally snapped out of, I got my happy back. I said, this is bullshit. I'm done. I'm just going to do what I got to do. Tired of hearing all this bullshit and just stay safe, stay away from people, and I'm good to go. And we've been trying to keep this show as normal as possible for people to try and forget about what's going on. So
yeah,
let's hope they enjoy
it. That's beautiful.
How are you dealing with everything? I mean, you guys, I believe you and Rick Springfield were doing a tour soon, right?
We basically got we went from about 60 to 90 shows to zero. Everything has been, most of our shows were in like state fairs and, you know, sheds and places like that.
Right.
And, of course, they were the first ones to get canceled. So we're just kind of sitting on our hands right now. And thank God that I was smart back in the early days, back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And I hung on to my publishing, you know, because I wrote all those songs, Bread Jeopardy and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, I had a opportunity to buy it back, I bought it back because I was, you know, I did 17 years of morning radio, which will warp you for life, let me tell you.
I know.
And when that was over, I was like, you know, I was like, okay, let's go back out on the road again. Who am I? You know, what am I supposed to do?
And you got your happy life.
You know, of all the things I do in my life, playing live in front of an audience is my favorite. It's
right.
Wonderful. I could do that, and I'm going to do that until I'm 100 years old.
Right.
Problem is, they pulled the carpet out from under us. So we're, you know, basically, where I was going with this is that I still get all of my royalties and all of my songwriting and publishing that I bought back over the years. And so now that I have a couple of months where, you know, my income is cut to zero, boom, I got all this other money coming in from a different situation. So I'm fine. I'm just fine. Waiting for this whole thing to be over.
Right, right. Well, when you got all your rights back, you remastered everything and put it out again, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, that was a lot of fun. I own the master tapes, the publishing, everything. So, and the original artwork. So any of the early, and what I made like 18 albums or something.
Wow.
So all of that stuff is now available on the gregkin.com website, original artwork and all. And it was a lot of fun putting that together. You know, as I look back on my career, I mean, first of all, I can't believe I'm still going. You know, I started back in the early Paleozoic era.
Well, you know what, Greg, when music is good, it doesn't matter what era it is. It's timeless, and it never leaves us, you know. So
You know, I have so many wonderful memories, and we played with everybody that you can name, you know, over the years, played a million gigs. And those are my fondest memories. I remember when my mom was still alive. And we were playing a gig in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. I can't remember the name of the venue, but it was a big venue in Cherry Hill. And we were playing with Joan Jett.
Oh,
and
wow.
Joan, yeah, she just, and I've been friends with Joni forever, going back to the Runaways.
Yeah.
Love that girl. She's great. And,
yeah,
you know, we've been best of friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, so my mother, of all people, was friends with Joni's mother because they're from Baltimore.
Right, right.
Once you're a Baltimore boy, you're a Baltimore boy or a Baltimore girl. So anyway, my mother walks up. She feels like she knows Joan. So she walks up to me. This is the kind of memories that I, you know, that I keep in my brain. My mother, when she was alive, walked up to Joan at the gig. She was still sweaty. She'd come right off stage. And my mother walks up to her and she goes, "Honey, you're such a pretty girl. Why don't you smile? Smile, and the world smiles with you." And about that time, I caught up. I said, "Mom, please. Joni is not a smiler. She doesn't. She snarls." You know.
Well,
you know, I love those kinds of memories, man.
I mean, those type of memories. I mean, no one could have them other than somebody like you. I mean, and you are the quintessential American rock star. That here you are, this young boy, 14. You get mesmerized by the Beatles, I'm assuming. And you become, would you ever think that you've gone to where you were based on sitting watching Ed Sullivan that day and your life?
Oh, are you kidding? I had no idea. And it would have shocked me if I could have looked ahead, you know, 15, 20 years. But I did make up my mind when this was back. You got to remember, this is back a long time ago. You never saw rock and roll on TV. There were only three channels.
Right.
And, you know, everybody, the whole family would sit together in the living room and watch the big, you know, the big TV. Back in those days, TVs were like furniture, right? Big cabinets and so. And we would watch everything together. And I remember that moment when the Beatles, they opened with All My Lovin', I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls were screaming, and the band sounded great. And I turned to my mother and father, and I said, "That's what I want to do. That's what I'm going to do." And I remember my mother going, "You're not going to do that. Forget it."
I can only imagine, you know.
Oh, man. You know, a lot of people, because I did a million interviews when I was on the radio, obviously. And everybody could trace it back to the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. I mean, if you asked anybody, you know, any American musician, especially guitar players. Beatles on Ed Sullivan. That's where it started.
Right. That's what I meant. That you're like the quintessential of every other musician. They had that eye opening. It wasn't the Beatles. It was Elvis, or it was both, you know. So.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you, do you think MTV, if MTV hadn't come along, do you think your impact would have taken longer, or what do you think?
Oh, no, that was like getting on the accelerator course, you know, that was great. Because we had made, you know, that was our second or third hit, you know, because Breakup Song, I think, was before that. And that was so early, there was no video for the Breakup Song. Obvious, except for a live thing that we taped at the country club. So when we came along, everything was like a fake live. We were one of the first concept videos that had a story and you could follow it, and it influenced everything that, you know, because Thriller by Michael Jackson, you know, that was like a half a year later, and it was our exact same idea. So I knew I was on the right thing. We actually cut the video we did it in a church, Mission Dolores in San Francisco. It's a very famous church. It was the one that was in the original Dirty Harry movies. We go in there to do the thing, and I know in my heart that I'm going to hell for the stuff that I did in that church after hours. I mean, this was our heavy partying stage. You know what I mean? Like, we were, you know, we were doing blow. We were drinking Jack Daniels. We were smoking giant reefers. We were, you know, we were out of it.
Oh, God, well, it was a crazy time, and it was a fun time. It just wasn't, you know, it wasn't just you guys were having a ball. Now,
it was fun. We did that in one 48-hour shoot. We got in there. We had a trailer outside so we could sleep in between stuff. And we did it. It was like a 3-4-day shoot straight through, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, now that video is like a, you know, it's a classic because it was the first concept video. And of course, the MTV played the hell out of it because there was nothing else different. It was either a live thing or that. So that's why we got tons and tons of airplay on MTV. And it was wonderful. And I used to go down, whenever I was in New York, I'd go down to the studio and tape an interview or something like that. And this, in those days, they were the nicest, wonderfulest people, you know. I mean, Martha Quinn and the whole gang, you know. And I would go there. We all knew each other because we kind of all came up together. And it was a real feeling of camaraderie, you know.
Yeah.
All the other bands were rooting for each other.
Right, right. Well, it was a great time. It was a great time. Now, Joe Satriani play with you guys in the band?
Joe.
I had no idea.
Yeah, a lot of people don't because it was only, I guess, about a year and a half, maybe 2 years that he was in the band. We did a lot of touring with Joe. And let me tell you, Joe is a great musician.
Phenomenal.
He's a cut above. He taught my son when this was way back before Joe was famous, or even when he was in the Squares, was a Berkeley band that he was in. He taught my son when my son was 13 guitar lessons. So my son grew up with Joe as his mentor. And, you know, after Joe left the band, my son, Rye, joined up, and he was only he was still in his teens.
How cool is that to have your son touring with you and playing with you? How cool is that? Wow.
I love it. It's so cool.
Would you ever think that would happen?
No, God, I didn't. Are you kidding me? I didn't even think I'd be here now at this point.
Right.
It's amazing that that we're still going. I this would be a good point to mention that I'm working, you know, because we've had all this downtime the last 2 months. So I've been working on my autobiography, and I'm about maybe 100 pages into it right now, and it's unbelievable. I got so many stories. I mean, so many crazy, weird stuff that happened to me between all my careers as a novelist, as a rock star, and as a radio personality. You know, you get around the block a couple of times. I have stories about everything and everybody.
Right.
So I'm just, you know, like, it's writing itself. You know what's a good one when it writes itself, right?
Right, right. Well, of course, your life would write itself. I mean, the experience, I can only imagine.
Yeah, I just decide, you know, what to not have in.
Right. Can you share one of the cool stories that are in the book?
Yeah, absolutely. Winterland was a great venue that Bill Graham had, and all the big people played at Winterland, and we were known as America's opening band because Bill Graham was, you know, liked me a lot, and he would hire us to open for people. So the night before, they're closing the place. You know, this building has got a date with the Wrecking Ball, like in a month. Mm-hmm. And the last gig was the Grateful Dead. They played for like 13 hours or something. And you can buy the video. But what I'm talking about is the night before that. That was the next night. It was 2 days before they closed the venue. And it was me and Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Yeah.
So we're backstage, and I'm sitting there with a couple of the guys from the Heartbreakers, and we're in a backstage dressing room, and I think it was Ben Montench said, "Hey, imagine all the people that have primped in this mirror before they go out and play the gig. Imagine." And you're right, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, Brian Jones. You name it, they did, you know, and they're mostly dead.
Right.
And I go, and so he says, that would be a world-class souvenir if you could take that mirror. And I said, oh, my God, you're right. Give me a screwdriver. So we started working on it. It was a door-sized mirror. And I thought, I'm going to put this in my house, and every time anybody goes, hey, you know, that was Janis Joplin's mirror, or that was Jimi Hendrix's mirror, you know.
Wow.
And so this was the day before they were closing. So people are unbolting the seats and carrying out, you know, they were like bleacher kind of seats.
They
were carrying it right out under and right under Bill's nose. He didn't care. So anyway, I get in there and I go, I got to get this mirror. So I spent, you know, about a half an hour carefully removing the mirror. You know, it'd been on there for like 20 years or 30 years. Finally got it done, took it down. This was back when I had a Alfa Romeo sports car, a little two-seater. I had to take the top down, put the mirror in the passenger side, and then strap it in. And I went about maybe 10 feet, and the whole thing shattered into a million pieces, and I was picking glass shards out of my ass for the next 9 years.
Oh, that sucks, though. Oh, man, I can't believe a piece like that. Oh, God. Like you said, that's just a fabulous piece to have. Oh, my God, you're right. I mean, imagine how many people have used that mirror. Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, and I thought to myself, you know what? Their ghosts are all in this mirror, their reflections. And they don't want to go to my house. They probably said, fuck this, I'm not going.
Well, let me ask you this about Jeopardy. Now, I didn't know you were into horror. Did you have anything to do with the character in the video, Jeopardy?
Yeah.
And tell us about your horror thing, how you're so into that, like how'd that come about?
Yeah, I always loved creature features when I was growing up, and I loved B-movies, and I loved the old sci-fi horror movies and stuff from the 50s and 60s when I was a kid. I used to watch it, you know, growing up on creature features. So when we were kicking around ideas for the Jeopardy video, we had a little meeting, and Joe Day, who was the director of the video, says, "Hey, Greg, what are you into?" And I said, "I'm not into anything." He goes, "Well, you must be into something." Well, I go, "Well, I like old horror movies." He goes, "That's it. We'll do it as a parody of Night of the Living Dead." Mm. And it was based on my first marriage anyway was about like that. So it was a lot of fun, and we had to come up with special effects, but we had no budget. You remember the giant rubber snake that comes up out of the floor and wraps around me in the video? Well, what we did was we shot that in reverse, and I held the snake around me, and then I let go. It was rubber, and it went wang, 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 woom, and retreated. And when you played it backwards, it looked like you came out of the floor and grabbed me. It looked really cool. Yeah. We did a lot of stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't recall the video you're talking about with where you got it from, but it worked out fabulous, though. So. Cool.
Yeah, and also my literary career, I've written a couple of horror novels, and it's just something that I love. You know, I still love, as a matter of fact, you know, I've been doing a ton of reading lately. I don't know if other people listening out there, I've just been burning through books. And I'm right now about two-thirds of the way through the new Stephen King book. And I love Stephen King. I love everything he writes. I love all the horror guys.
Yeah.
And it gives me, it stimulates me to come up with ideas of my own.
Right.
Like, well, you want to hear this? Here's an idea I had yesterday. Okay.
Yeah.
This would be a movie. Okay. So I would write this as a treatment, a movie treatment.
You
the
sure you
homeless
want to?
Dead.
Wait. You sure you want to?
Yeah. Nobody's going to. If they steal my idea, God bless them.
Okay.
But anyway, the homeless dead. About homeless people getting a virus that after they die, they come back, you know, after the flesh of the living. And it would suit, you know, it would be kind of really timely, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I don't know
so
if you
anyway.
Know, but John is a big horror and B-movie buff. He's actually a director of B-movies. You may have seen something he's done or worked on, actually.
I don't
Wonderful.
Think Greg was
like,
saying anything. My last movie, Greg, was called Bigfoot Blood Trap. It was a modern-day love story.
Oh, that is brilliant.
But
what I
wanted to tell you is that the Jeopardy video, I remember it, when the first time I seen it on MTV, and I said, this is fantastic, you know, with the special effects with the handcuffs on the people when you're looking at the other people who are married to each other, and then you turn into the monster and everything, you know, it was just incredible. And that was never done at that time. Like you said, it was just, you know, basically videos of the people in the band playing. And I think you took it to a different direction at that time. You were telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, it started a movement where, like, from that point on, everybody had a concept video.
Yeah, I liked the face melting. I liked when that happened.
Yeah. Well, it used to be guys on stage interspersed with chicks in lingerie running down alleys, right? Isn't that
right,
the way it looked?
It was
a ridiculous. But, you know, once we introduced the concept into the concept video, the sky's the limit. And obviously, guys like Michael Jackson were stimulated by it and built the whole thing around it.
Right, right, and it it was, now I wanted to ask you this earlier, but I lost my train of thought. Was it a thrill that Al asked, Weird Al asked you to do the parody, or did you, a lot of people say that when he did a parody, they feel like, oh, we finally made it. Weird Al did a parody about us, you know? How was your reaction to that?
First of all, I was really proud and very flattered that he chose my song to parody. Yeah, and it was really good. And the idea, I lost on Jeopardy. It was so perfect. So the nice thing about it was I got to be in the video. I got to meet Don Pardo when he was still alive. You remember Don? Here's what you didn't win. That guy, and that was a trip.
Don Pardo.
I love those guys. And I got to tell you, Weird Al is one of the nicest guys in the world. He's funny. The whole time you're with him, you're laughing, you know, because he's cracking jokes continuously.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah, I think he's a genius for what he did at the time and blew it open for everybody. Every time he did a song, he did it tastefully and it was good. And
it was real good.
Yeah, and Jeopardy just fell in his lap because I lost. I mean, it just worked perfectly. You know, it was just there. It just fell.
Oh
in the
yeah.
Lap.
Hey,
it was just
you know what?
Nice.
I still get mailbox money from Weird Al. God bless that man, because he put that on Weird Al's Greatest Hits, which went like platinum or something. Since I own the publishing and all that stuff, it was like having two hits for the price of one. Because we had a spring summer big hit with Jeopardy, and then by fall, as that was waning. Along comes Weird Al, and he has a hit that takes us all the way through Christmas. And it was like, he went on the road and did all the heavy lifting. Stayed home and received checks. It was great. I loved it.
Hey,
well,
Greg, I got a question for you, Greg. With the breakup song, that was really guitar-driven, really heavy guitar work in there. And did you play a 12-string on that particular cut?
Yeah, I did. I played the Rickenbacker. I had a couple of 12s, and I had a Vox Phantom. And the problem with the Rickenbacker was that the neck was too skinny, and my big old Polish sausage fingers couldn't make certain chords. So I got the Vox, which was like a third wider, and it was lots easier to play, but it didn't have the same, obviously, the twang of the Rickenbacker. But actually what you're hearing there is a composite between the Ricky and a Telecaster that was run through like a processor that, you know, like, what am I looking for? What's the word I'm looking for? You know, when they used to use Leslie tone cabinets and they got that chorus effect, and we ran through that. And that was a composite of two or three tracks of guitar. I loved that guitar, by the way. And a lot of the stuff, you know, it's amazing. Now I'm back in the studio working on new material. Obviously, I'm always working on new material. And the thing that comes out, the thing that kind of...
Go ahead, honey.
What?
I'm sorry. No, I wanted to tell you, when you're done with your new material, please, please, please come and see us. And we'll play.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, I would love that. You know, and we'll probably be on the road at that point in time. So that'll be great. You know, that... the stuff that we're writing right now, it's very much like the breakup song. It's guitar driven. You know, I come up with a goofy guitar. I'm not a great guitar player. I'm really a rhythm guitar player. But I come up with these riffs, like the breakup song riff, out of the clear blue sky. And a lot of the new songs feature those types of guitar riffs. So you could take that and build the song around it.
Exactly.
And it sounds like a Greg Ken song. What can I say?
Hey, Greg, since the breakup song was really guitar-driven and everything, then you went to Jeopardy, and that to me, that's like a keyboard-driven song, wasn't it?
That's a great story because we were looking, you know, we used to write a song every 2 or 3 days. You know, we would rehearse literally every day. So when a gig comes up, you know, we've had a week of rehearsal with a new song. We put in new songs all the time. And one day, my bass player, Steve Wright, one of the most creative guys in the world, he comes by my house and he's just purchased this little Casio keyboard. You remember that? That just came out like in the 80s and they had a little drum machine in it and they had, you know, maybe a half a dozen sounds that you could do. So he's playing and he says, check the clavinet. And he turns on the clavinet and he starts playing out of the clear blue sky. And I said, what is that? He goes, I don't know. I just made it up. I said, play it again. We did it again. I came up at almost as if I was channeling the song and it was floating around the air right at that moment because I literally started singing Our Love's in Jeopardy. It came out of nowhere.
Wow.
And you know, those are the best songs that come out of nowhere. It's like you're channeling the song. It already exists in the air and you're just making it real, you know?
Right, putting it all together, making it work. And it was great. I mean, the hook was great, the everything.
Oh,
was great.
Yeah, and when, as soon as we did that, I went into the rehearsal studio the next day and we rehearsed it. And the next day after that, we went into the studio and cut it. And I remember it was probably two takes. You know, it was one of those songs. Every once in a while, you hit a song that kind of writes itself, it plays itself, it's perfect.
Right.
And,
that's
very rare.
That's when you know it's a hit. That's
exactly. And even the first day that we wrote it, I said, that's a hit. That's going to be our hit.
Yep.
And it was. It was a number one record. So now I can say I've had a number one record.
Yeah.
And I've been parodied by Weird Al. And what is left? Hell, you know, that's it.
Wow. Well, those of you who didn't know, Greg's books are The Horror Show and the other one, I believe, what's it called? Shade of Pale.
Yeah. And then there was Big Rock Beat and Mojo Hand.
And then
my last two novels were rock and roll novels, Rubber Soul, which was about the early days of the Beatles, and Paint It Black, which was about the early days of the Stones.
Wow. So not only you're writing books like crazy too, and now you're doing the autobiography.
Yeah. Well, you know, since I got all this time on my hands lately, I've been getting a lot of work done in that department. And you know what? It's fun. It really is. It's something you can do by yourself. You're sitting there in your computer, and, you know, it's just you and the printed page. It's a lot of fun to me.
Right. Well, you're enjoying yourself. You're doing what you love. When you do what you love, you know, it's not work, they say. So, you know, it's great.
That's right.
You know,
I'm dying to see how this autobiography comes out. You know, right now I had about 100 pages, and they're really good. But I'm kind of running out of stuff to write about, so I got to expand what I've got. But you know, it's so much fun writing this stuff that, you know, it's not a problem.
Right, and I'm sure it's gonna just come to you as life goes, as it went. So, Greg,
So here's the problem. Here's the problem. What am I gonna call it? You know, all of my albums got Kin in the title. Citizen Kin, Rock and Roll, Kinspiracy, all that kind of stuff. What am I going to... So I was racking my brain trying to come up with an idea for the title. Okay, let me try this one, okay? It's kind of long. The title would be The Road to Rock and Roll Heaven is Paved by the Bleached Skulls of Guys Like Greg Kinn.
Oh, wow. Wow. That is a long
I just thought that's too long. I'll just maybe, how about the Bleached Skulls?
No, I know. That's cool. That's cool. It's long, but it's cool.
Hey, you know, the nice thing about being a Bay Area rock and roller, you know, it's like a fraternity of people. Everybody knows everybody. You know, I play with all these people all the time, the Doobie Brothers, Huey Lewis when he was playing. God, you know, my one of my best friends of all time, Eddie Money, we just lost.
Yeah.
That was terrible. And by the way, I'm on the Eddie Money tribute concert that you see on Access TV from time to time. And it was really, I mean, we were all together, old friends. Mickey Thomas, John Waite, it was tons of people there. Sammy Hagar was there.
Greg, where was it on? I didn't see it. And what's it called?
Well, Access. Eddie Money Tribute Concert, and it's on the Access, that's the rock and roll station, Access, and it's, you know, just look for it. They rerun stuff all the time.
Yeah,
I'm gonna check it out. And it's me, it's got Sammy Hagar, it's got his kids, it's got John Wayne, it's got George Thorogood. It was a big concert. We had a lot of fun remembering Eddie, and that was a tragic loss. And, you know, I've known Eddie. Eddie was one of the first guys I ever met when I came to California. He was a lead singer in a band called The Rockets, and they were out of Berkeley. And I was in L.A., and I ran into The Rockets. We were doing a showcase at a place called the Starwood. This was years ago. And they said, hey, you should come up to Berkeley. There's gigs, there's clubs, and you could play. So I did. That was all because of Ed. Ed said, you should come up to Berkeley. And once I got to Berkeley, everything worked out. I mean, it's funny because I used to play in the streets. When I first got to Berkeley, I had no money. So I had to play in the streets, busking, they call it. And I used to play on Telegraph Avenue, Hippie Street, USA, right? Main Street, hippie. And I'd sit up on the corner, open my guitar case, and I used to make about $40 a day playing in the street. That was reasonable. You know, in those days, that was good money.
Right.
So one day, a guy walks up to me, he says, my name is Malcolm, and I own a place called the Long Branch Saloon. And I'd heard of the Long Branch Saloon because Eddie played there and my friends in Earthquake played there. And he goes, you know, it's really a shame that you don't have a band because I need a house band right away.
Nice.
The band, I think it was Earthquake, was the house band, and they quit to do something else. And he says, I need a band by Friday night. Mm-hmm. And it was like already Tuesday. And I lied to the guy. I said, I got a band. It's really good. It's pretty good. So I called up Steve Wright, my bass player and my best friend that we were writing songs together. And he goes, hey, you know, my brother-in-law is a pretty good drummer. Why don't we ask him? And I knew this guy in high school that Dave Carpenter was. Everybody thought he was a great guitar player. So I slapped again that band together in 4 days, and that band stayed together for 18 years and had a whole bunch of hits. Is that unbelievable?
It is. It's just amazing. It really is. I mean, who would have thunk it, right? I mean, I was going to say for your book, call it Kin You Believe It. Can you believe
I like that. That's like great.
With the K-I-H-N. Can you believe it? Like all the shit you're going to have in the book.
I love that. I love I think
that's
you did
good.
It. And if
Never
and
know.
If that becomes
Never
it, you're gonna have to have me back on the show.
No,
and we'll reminisce about how we came up with that.
Yeah, no, 10%. No reminiscing. I'm only kidding. I'm kidding. Oh, no. I would be honored. You kidding me if you use that? That would be a thrill, and absolutely you're coming
back.
Hey,
listen, we're running out of kin titles. I mean, let's face it. I've used all of the good ones.
Not sure.
Next of kin, conspiracy,
yeah.
Contagious.
There's probably
consolidation.
There's probably tons of them that are still there, you know. Can you
believe
it?
Well, you just came up with a killer.
I like that. Can you believe it? I like it too. So, but now
I love that.
Let me ask you. So, why don't you ask you about the books? Oh, the book. Do you think they're going to put any into movie form, or has anything been discussed on that?
Well, that's what I'm aiming for, and I got a lot of people down in Hollywood circulating. A lot of these were written with movies in mind,
right?
You know, and so I definitely want to do that. That's where I'm going to probably go next with my career. Right now, Hollywood's kind of like shut down, so that it's really good. You need a thing called a show. What is it? Showstopper. I forget. You write the treatment, and then you make a sizzle reel.
Yeah.
You know, with like maybe one or two, you know, scenes from the novel. And you know, there's a lot of production. You got to spend money, and I'm going to do that probably as soon as they start lifting all of these restrictions. So that's my goal.
Right. Well, if let's say this crazy crap wasn't going on right now, where would you guys be? I know you come out to the PNC a lot out in Jersey.
Yeah.
So were you still doing the Rick Springfield tour, or was it a new tour?
Yeah, whenever it gets rebooked, yes, we will be in there. And
right.
That, you know, I have a great relationship with Rick. He's a super nice guy. I used to go with, tours with him back in the 80s. Back around, I mean, when Jeopardy was out, I remember playing, doing tours with Rick. He's always been a real gentleman, a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
And chicks love him, by the way. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You know, his audience is 99% chicks. It's great.
Now you I was going to ask you also about the Bram Stoker Award. I mean, that must have been unbelievable as a musician, and here now you're getting recognized for writing horror. I mean, that and
yeah,
horror,
that was a mind blower,
yeah,
you know. And
what was your first instinct in your creative life? Was it the horror genre, or was it music? Was
yeah.
it writing? What was it?
Well, you know, I always wrote short stories and stuff like that, even going back to high school. And I had, you know, I would write, you know, short pieces, like 10, 20 page things of just ideas that I would get, you know. And then that, the next step, I remember I wrote Horror Show as a short story. It was about a 40, 50 page short story. And then the more I read it, I said, you know, this is the beginning of a really great idea. So I took it from the short story and expanded it into a novel.
Right.
And it really worked well. And I think a lot of the other people in the Horror Writers Association, they kind of looked on me like, you know, like I was a junior weight guy. Like, everybody was rooting. Oh, it's Greg. It's great that he's coming over here joining us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very, very flattered that I got that. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, it's a labor of love for me. So it's not work or anything.
Right.
You know, I got so many ideas that I'm working on right now. You know, I'm working on the autobiography. I got a new novel coming out called The Devil and Hank Williams.
Oh, wow.
I got, it's unbelievable.
Can you tell us about that one or not yet?
Yeah, I can tell you about it.
What's
that? Well, it's about the last few days of Hank Williams.
Okay.
And this guy is looking for his sister, and she sold her soul to the devil in the, you know, to be the greatest fiddle player of all time. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a well-trod path that.
I can't believe you said that, because as soon as you said that, the devil went down to Georgia is in my head right now. The devil went down.
Oh, yeah. Well, think about it. Look, first of all, Hank Williams was the all-time greatest, and he died at the age of 29 when he was at his peak. I mean, that is unbelievable. You know he must have made a soul to the devil, because the devil came and collected. He died in a Cadillac in the backseat on his way to a gig in a snowstorm. And I thought, man, there is a great story in that. So I did. I wrote the thing, and, you know, I can only conjecture what happened to a lot of people. Well, it's a long story, but a lot of people think that he died an hour or two before he actually died. And in that hour or two, he had to go before the devil and plead his case that he wouldn't, you know, go to hell. So he went in there because this girl made a deal with the devil, and she had to go in, and he went in her place because he was already at the end of his rope. What does God love the best? God loves self-sacrifice. And here's this guy giving up his immortal soul for this young teenage girl. And when he's in the Cadillac driving to the gig, and he dies, and the angels come to him and they go, "You're not going to hell because you made this tremendous sacrifice to go in place of the girl. So you get to go to heaven."
Wow.
That's it in a nutshell. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Hey Greg, I think your next step should be into filmmaking, because I think you'd make an excellent director.
Right.
Oh, I would love that. But, you know, where do you get the money? You got to get the money.
Tell him, John.
Well, you have to do it like I do it. You do it for basically
nothing.
You got
to sell your soul to the devil to do that.
You got to get your friends to work on it, and you got to learn how to edit it everything.
Oh, yeah.
But you could do it.
You know, I got to tell you, all the stuff that we've been talking about, my number one movie idea is, are you ready for this? This is the one.
Yeah.
This is the one that's going to break through. Godzilla in Love. Okay, can you visualize that? It's about the guy in the rubber suit who falls in love with the director's daughter.
Oh my God.
Isn't that Godzilla in Love?
That is wild. Oh, that's so funny. That's great. That is great. Oh my God.
Yeah.
The ideas are off the wall, fresh but great, you know.
yeah, you know, that's my business, is coming up with ideas all the time, whether it's a song or a story or a novel or whatever. Coming up, as long as you keep coming up with fresh new ideas, you're okay. You're still in the game. I guess when that dries up, that's when you start worrying.
I got to ask you something. I'm looking at your bio here, and you, of course, you did what everybody did during the time: Solid Gold, American Bandstand, Saturday Night Live, all the shows that premiered music and played music on them. What was your experience at Solid Gold? Because when we watched it at the time, we thought it was cool, And when we got older, we thought it was the stupidest show ever. You know what I mean? But what was your experience doing Solid Gold?
You know, it was a lot of fun. We did it a ton of times. Jeez, I must have done it a dozen times over the years.
Nice.
And the guys in the band, you know, we're just regular guys. We're just regular guys from Berkeley. And
right.
when they, you know, and the Solid Gold dancers were always right in your face, you know, going, doing their thing while you're playing.
Right, right.
And it's very distracting. My guys, like, didn't take much to get them distracted. They'd, like, look over and go, oh, my God. And they would lose their place in the song.
Yeah.
And that happened all the time. I remember it was a lot of fun just watching everybody kind of get goofy, you know.
Mm. I know. Well, we loved the show at the time, you know. I mean, I haven't seen it in ages, you know. What kind of type of show did you have when you were doing the morning show on the radio?
It was a classic rock format. I did usually an interview a day. Whoever was in town, because I knew everybody. See, that was the cool thing about it. If somebody was playing in town, you know, if Brian Setzer was in town or you know, anybody, I could get them on the show, at least get them on the phone. Sometimes they come down to the thing and we would jam.
Nice.
But, that, you know, it was really a laid-back kind of – I didn't have a shtick. I was just basically me
in
the way I'm talking to you right now. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, apart from getting up at 4 in the morning, which killed me, 17 years of 4 in the morning, I sleep till noon every day now. And I told my wife I'm probably going to do this in the next 5 years before I catch up to the sleep that I miss.
Wow. I was, you know, now you can do it from home, you know.
Oh, yeah. Hey, things have really changed now. You can do it from home. And radio's changed. You know, the problem with radio is you got to do it every day. You got to constantly come up. And I'm too busy writing and coming up with new ideas while I still got them. I think it would be kind of a waste to put everything on hold and go back on the radio again, even though I love doing it and I would I'd gladly go back. But right now it's the time to, you know, really log as much of your work as possible.
Right, right. Well, that's the thing to do. Like if you're a creative person, this is like a fabulous time for us right now. And everything is stopped and we're doing nothing but working on creative stuff. The, you know, creativity, you know, of what we can do.
Yeah,
and
that did in a nutshell. I think when that starts to dry up, that's when you got a problem.
Right.
But in the meantime, hey, I say, let's, you know, onwards and upwards. And my advice, people always ask me, how did you do this? How did you do that? And I knew in my heart, everything was impossible. I knew it was impossible to have a hit record. I knew it was damn near impossible to have a hit radio show and to, you know, to win the Bram Stoker Award or any of that kind of stuff.
But I
didn't ever think about how hard it was. To me, everything was kind of easy. So I didn't sweat it. You know what I mean? And my advice to people, you know, because writers and musicians come up to me and they ask me, you know, what's your advice? And my advice is write it.
Right.
Write it now. Write it while you got the idea. Get a notebook. Keep it with you. Write down your ideas. Someday they may be worth $1 million.
Right.
So write them down. And, you know, don't worry about how it's impossible. It's not impossible. It's impossible if you think about it too much. But if you just do it, just do it.
And never, never, ever give up. Because if you do, you're done.
Yeah,
you know.
You said it back earlier in the interview when you said, if you love your job, it's not work.
Exactly.
And that's the kind of thing, like right now, I'm basically sequestered like everybody else. But, you know, I got enough work to go around, and if I had nothing, that would be pretty bad.
Exactly. So let me ask you this. If you did not have the fabulous career that you have, what do you think you would have been doing with yourself, with your life?
Oh, God.
You started playing guitar very young. I mean, when did you really get good playing the guitar? I mean, you were like 14-ish around there, and then...
Yeah, that was about right, yeah. Hey, I never really got that good. I got to the point where I, knew like the basic chords. And then I started writing songs, and that's all I needed. So I never really developed as a lead guitarist. But, of course, I got my son covering that bass right now, and he's like a junior Satriani, so it works out very well.
Right. Well, I can't imagine being taught by Joe Satriani. My God. I mean,
Hey, I remember when he used to come over to my house. And it was like, I've been after Joe to join my band for years. Mm-hmm. And one of the... he was in a band called The Squares in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And I kept, every time I'd see Joe, hey, Joe, you want to join my band? Nope. Loyal to The Squares. Eventually, The Squares broke up, and he called me one day, and he goes, hey, The Squares broke up. You still want me? I said, damn right I want you.
Yeah, he's great. Oh, my God.
He used to go, when we would play a gig, he'd show up, we'd do the soundtrack. Then me and the guys would do, maybe a half hour sound check, and we would go back to the hotel, eat something, maybe have a couple of beers, smoke a joint, and come back, right? Mm-hmm. He stayed at the venue, and he sound checked the whole time. Wow. So after the band left, he sound checked his guitar for like another 2-3 hours.
Wow.
He was such a perfectionist. Unbelievable. Yeah. And I'd go back, and I said, eventually... I said, Joe, you're too good for this band. You're just too good. I mean, I'm a 3-chord guy, and you're like a 3,000-chord guy, and it's just not going to work. And I said, you got to pursue your own thing. And of course, he went right out and did the Alien album, and that was a big hit, and the rest is history. I still talk to Joe every once in a while. I see him at a gig, and it's always great.
Right. He's phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. You kidding? Oh, my God. I was in one of my cover bands. I was in my lead guitarist. He was really good, and he did. He emulated Satriani, but he's no Satriani. You know what I mean? But he was fantastic. And, you just got to love that. You got to love somebody who could play and be that dedicated to make it sound that beautiful and make it look effortless. You know what I mean?
And absolutely. Yeah, it was a privilege having Joe in the band. And, I look back on all the years. I mean, I've had a ton of great guitar players, but Joe is the best, and I still love him. And, my son really is a junior Joe, so that works out great.
God, I know. You've got a mini Satriani in the band. So, well, where can folks get your books right now?
You can get everything at gregkin.com. That's my website, and you can buy the books, you can buy any of the CDs, plus we got the new greatest hits CD. Basically, you can buy, it's one-stop shopping. You can get everything you want right there at the gregkin.com website. So cool. I would just say go on over there, browse to your heart's content, and buy everything you want. We'll make more.
Exactly. And I wanted to say also, when you are ready to release that new music, please, 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 please come back. I'm begging you.
Absolutely.
Because
it's the deal.
we're actually going to be doing a segment very soon. It might be, I'm not sure what day it'll be on, but Nina Blackwood may be joining us to do a new music. We're doing something called New Old Music, artists who have obviously like
great
yourself,
idea.
Who are fantastic and we're on top and we're major hits and there's no outlet to play your music right now. So come and play with us, you know?
That sounds fantastic. I definitely will be there.
Yeah, so we're seeing if we can get John to join us on it. So hopefully he can have fun with it too. So I got to talk to Johnny about that.
Yeah,
that sounds good.
Hey, I'd like to get to the fat with you, John. If I'm in your town anytime soon, you know, we can go out and grab a burger or something, and just I want to hear all about your adventures in the film trade.
Oh, John can
well,
tell
could,
you so
maybe,
well,
maybe
yeah.
Joanne, you can give Greg my email address and I can contact him and I can send him the links and go watch
yes.
the movie.
Yes, could you
yeah.
do that? Yes.
Yeah, well, Greg, what
yeah.
I'll do, I'll email John and give him John's information and then you guys can work it out, you know?
Yeah, hey, my email address, by the way, is gkim@comcast.net. So you just anything you want to, just send it to me.
Cool,
great.
Cool. Yeah, because John can definitely tell you how to go about putting your stuff into film because, I mean, he's been doing for years.
Well, the main thing, Greg, you got the name, so that's like a big plus. So, you know, that'll get
$1.50 will get you a cup of coffee, basically.
Yeah,
you know,
true.
In the new world,
yeah, but,
it doesn't matter. I mean, you could be... you know, you could be anybody. It's just like everybody has to start over. It's like they push the reset button, you know?
No, I know, but what he's saying, like when you're doing a B movie and you've got a name like yourself, you could get people that you know so many people that would help
yeah,
you.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
hey, listen, that would be great. That would be fantastic.
Yeah, and John,
you know what would be really cool, Greg? If you were able to get some of your musician friends to be in one of your movies, if you have all those
yeah.
names in there with people,
sure.
because I know that
most musicians
want to be actors, and a lot of actors want to be musicians. So if you can turn your musician friends into actors, you have a full a cast of the listing there, and that'll boost that movie
yeah,
right
that,
up there.
That's a brilliant idea. That is
yeah.
really very
yeah.
good.
Yep, yep, absolutely.
Hey, yeah, go ahead. And I definitely want to pursue that, so we'll talk about that, you know,
yeah.
in the future, man.
Yeah, cool.
Cool.
Greg, is there anything else you want to let folks know what's going on before we say
no.
out?
Well, I, you know, all of our gigs are canceled, so I got nothing to do.
Right.
I'm sequestered with the home working on...
Working
on my autobiography, and I got some songs coming up. So, you know,
Greg,
we're just biding our time.
Why don't you do some Facebook Live stuff? Everybody's doing it, and people are
yeah,
loving it.
Yeah, you know, that's on the to-do list. So I'm going to be probably coming up with some stuff like that in the next 2 weeks.
Cool. I'd love to see it. You know, but
hey, I really appreciate it, all your help, you guys. It's been an education for me just talking to you guys.
Oh, not education, fun.
Well, Billy, take the
Greg,
Billy,
I
take
also
the
want,
bird away.
Hey, Greg. I also want to tell you, too, that I had a cover band for many, many years, and I sang the breakup song. And I tell you, whenever we did that song, the dance floor would be packed. There would be a smile on everybody's face. It was just one of those songs that no matter what you did, it just got the whole place up and going. It was just a great song.
Yeah, we did
yeah,
it, too.
Yeah, it's still like
yeah.
that, too.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
still
yeah.
like that. Every time we whip that song out live, it's wonderful. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, all I can say is it's been a pleasure, Greg. I thank you so much. You just, I can kick my bucket now. I've filled the bucket list again. So I thank you so much I thank you so much for joining us. It really was a pleasure, and I hope you enjoyed yourself. We like to consider this just like a hangout night and just chill and talk. So I hope you felt comfortable.
That's it.
And had a nice time.
Very enjoyable. Hey,
great.
It was a pleasure.
No. Thank you
so much, Greg.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Greg Kinn, thank you so much, sir. You can check out all his books at gregkinn.com. And his new book coming out, his autobiography, Kinn, You Believe It?
Yeah.
I like
you
that.
You got to keep in touch with me on that now.
That's beautiful.
All right, honey. Thank you so much.
Hey, you guys, thank you so much.
Stay safe.
Take care, Greg.
Stay well, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Greg.
Bye-bye Kinn. Now.
All right. That was Greg Kinn. How fabulous was that? Oh, Mr. Alves, I'm so sorry. We have to reschedule. It was kind of hard to say goodbye to Greg. And actually, John and I were talking about the other day that we may limit the shows down to one guest depending on the evening. Because it's so hard to say goodbye to these people. They're so interesting. We're having a great time. And right, John? I just hate cutting them off, you know? And
no, you're right.
Away.
But I think we have to give Joe at least 90 minutes next time because I want to hear all about the movies.
Well, I was going to ask him when he's available. Maybe we could just throw something together. We don't need to even do it on our regular schedule night if you're not busy, John, you know, just to,
if he's up to it, I would put him on a separate night all by himself.
Are you busy tomorrow?
I feel bad that way to get to talk. Well, I would
too.
Do tomorrow. If he can go on tomorrow, I'll do it.
You'll do 8 o'clock if he can make it?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Yes, I mean, I couldn't say goodbye to Greg. It was just, you know, it was just too great of a conversation. And, I really don't like saying goodbye to any of them, for that matter. So I think that's what we should do, John. One guest at a time. And when we're done, we're done. That's it, you know. And,
yeah.
You know,
that's good.
We hate to deprive people who are listening, too, of, what they could have missed. I mean, if we didn't stay on, we would have never known that Greg was working on new music and all that. So, anyway, what do we got going on? All right. Join us on Wednesday, the 20th. Oh, this is going to be cool. We have a relationship expert, Rick. I cannot pronounce. I don't know if I'm saying it right. I will ask him when we speak. Rick Sotobier, I think. Je m'appelle Joanne, et sort de bien, I don't know, I'm not sure. Je m'appelle Joanne, I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce it, but we have Rick Sotobier. He's a relationship expert, and it's going to be pretty cool. He's going to be answering your questions about, oh God, how to date during a pandemic. How do you go out and on a date when you're wearing a face mask? How do you meet people? Not only that, but his true expert in dating and relationships and making them work, telling you what won't work and what not. So thank you again to our fabulous guest, Greg Kinn. Big fan. So my bucket has another dent, so I'm happy about that. Thank you to our sponsors, the Hive Bar and Bistro in Garfield, New Jersey, Precious Memory Video in Kentnersville, Pennsylvania, KWV Wines in South Africa, and Tees for the Times in Clifton. Johnny Boy, anything to add, honey boy? And thank you. Thank you. And our website.
No, I'm good.
Thank you to Donna Segura over at Oleander PR. She's working on our site and hope to have it up very soon for you guys. She's doing a wonderful job. So thank you to her. Appreciate that. And what else? That's it, right? I have nothing to add. You?
That's it.
Well, I had a nice time. How about you?
Yeah, as one of my favorite singers, songwriters of of all times, I got to talk to him. So
it's so
and
funny we did that.
And
song
he's a down to earth guy, right? He's just like a friend.
Yeah. We haven't had one of those conversations in a while. Felt good. Yeah, like I said, I'm getting my happy back, so I'm getting back to me. So, making sure, it's been a little weird, but what are you gonna do?
As they once said, Clarabelle, it's time to go, Clarabelle. Time to go.
Time to go, Clarabelle. Are you serious? Clarabelle,
time to go.
I probably can't even sing that anymore. Are you kidding? Well, thank you all for joining us. It's been fun. Stay safe, stay healthy. One day at a time, we'll get there, and we'll see you guys on Wednesday, the 20th, with Rick Sotheby, the relationship expert. And then, we got some great stuff coming up, too. Oh, real quick before we go. We got John Ford Coley from England, Dan and John Ford Coley. We got Dan Fishman. He was from head of the class. He's doing this great, I don't know if you see him on Facebook, John. He does magic on YouTube, and he's revealing the secrets of how a trick is done, which is pretty cool, you know. And then on the 27th, Butch Patrick from the Munsters, Eddie Munster, Stan Livingston from My Three Sons, he was Chip, and then the 31st, Rob Parisi from Wild Cherry. I can't wait till he gets on with Hey Yo. And Ed Rambo, he's a great singer-songwriter, and he writes some really great little quotes. I don't know where he gets them, but they are from him. You would think they were from a Hallmark card. They're fabulous. So, anyway, looking good, and we hope to see you guys soon. Thank you, Johnny Boy. You have a good night, and I'll let you know if Joe can make tomorrow.
Sounds good. Thanks, Joe. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.